Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, this is John Gibbons, and this is the third and final part of our conversation between Hillsborough survivors Peter Carney, Richie Greaves and Damien Kavanagh. Which started with me asking Damien about their relationship with the club.
Yeah. It's interesting to me, your relationship with the club, and you know, you talked there, Kav, about duty. It's not duty anymore. It doesn't seem to me, you know, there's not any more passionate Liverpool fans I know, and we all know each other through Liverpool Football Club and not through Hillsborough, but, we first met Rich because you lent me a Gerrard. You laid banner to take the ground when he died and stuff like that. And obviously, Peter, we got to know each other through your banners and stuff. And how has that been over the years, really, in terms of your relationship? Because there must have been times where I assumed that you felt like packing in. There must have been times where you've been angry at Liverpool Football Club, you know, or let down or what am I doing?
Up to that Super League.
Yeah.
There was a moment then when I said, no, that's my lot. And honest to God, I tossed and turned all night on the Sunday night. I tossed and turned and I thought, I'm not going again. That's it. I've finished. I've had enough. I'm going to learn how to play golf. Honestly, I was really ready to give it up. What am I going to do with myself? And all the other things were going through my mind and that, like, you know, what am I going to do? And it's shit and this, that, and the other and that, you know. And I got up the following morning and I just decided I'm getting the banners out the ground. Them banners are coming out the grounds. I'm going to get them out tomorrow and that's it. I'll go after work. I usually finish work about 3 o'clock. No, so I finish at 5 o'clock. But I can get someone to go for me at 3 o'clock.
John will edit this.
Yeah. And I thought, right, when I finish work tomorrow, I'm going to phone them first thing. And I'm going to go down and get them banners off the grounds at 5 o'clock. And that's my fucking loss. I'm not interested. One of the lads on our bus says, who did you think we are? The fucking Harlem Globetrotters. And I thought that was a great way of putting it. Cause that's what they want, isn't it? They want a circus. They want what was the big tall fella and used to have a they want the Harlem Globetrotters, don't they? And that's, let's be honest, that's what Barcelona and Real Madrid have become, haven't they? So I was ready to pack it in then over that. Gets up the following morning and the first message I see on my phone is from Spy and Cop 1906 saying, we're getting the banners out the ground. I went, yes. And suddenly, you know, I wasn't on my own. I wasn't tossing and turning in my own bed. You know, we on, and then I looked at the other messages and I had 4 or 5 other messages. I want my banner out the ground. You know what I mean? Because it's the only power that you've got. But after Hillsborough, there's many a time I've despaired of them, you know. I remember us organising, organising an event for the health workers from the hospitals and that, you know. And we asked them, and there was no one from the ground could come up. And I asked a junior player if he'd come. He said, fucking hell, Bach, you don't want me to do it, do you? And he didn't. It ended up with Craig Johnston was the celebrity that we had there. I despaired then. You know, well, what the fucking hell does it mean? You know, we've asked nicely, we've asked formally, you know what I mean? They can't put anyone forward. But the thing is, you see, that it's part of it. Are you going to give up on it? You know what I mean? It's part of me. I'm 62 years of age, John. I don't know what it is for these young ones, you know what I mean? I try and encourage them, you know, I run an away bus, you know what I mean? I try and enjoy the home matches as much as I can with me tour. You know, I get something out of that, I don't deny it, you know what I mean? I enjoy telling them, you know, telling them stories about how going to match. I'm trying to infuse them of the pleasure that it is to go to match, because it's going to match that I love doing. I can't sit and watch it on the telly. You know what I mean? When I sat and watched Scotland last night, I was sitting down to watch Scotland. I've got the computer next to me, sorting stuff out for another project that I'm working on. I'm not watching the match. You know what I mean? The match is on. You know what I mean? And what I'm really interested in is the price of crepe satin finished cloth. You know what I mean? For another project. That's what I'm interested in. The match is on.
Well, you're making a kilt scene as you're watching Scotland.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Yeah. But, I mean, the thing is, it's about going to match, and now going to match is a novelty. You know, I think for the next generation, I don't want to speak for them and say how the experience is, but it doesn't seem to be the same to me as it was what it meant to me at the time of, you know, Hillsborough. I wasn't going to match regularly at Hillsborough. I'd been playing with the best football that I'd played. I was playing for the Mariners. That was my passion, and was playing the game then, because I was coming up to 30, you know, and knew my days were numbered. I didn't play for much longer after that. You know what I mean? But it's going to match that matters to me. You know what I mean? And it's being part of that community. It's enjoying the company of others that you don't see. Even now, honest to God, I take a bus to away matches, right? And I'm not kidding when I say that I get greater pleasure. I can sit on a bus. I haven't heard it on the radio or nothing like that. I'm not computer savvy. I can't get it on my phone and what have you. And Liverpool are playing, you know, 50 yards from where I'm sitting on a bus. I don't know what's going on in there, right? But the pleasure I get is when them lads get on the bus and tell me what's going on in there. And I'll swear one of the two of the best experiences I've had at football recently, I wasn't even in the grounds. One was Aston Villa, because I heard the roar. And I knew we'd scored, which got us back in the game. And then when Mane scored the second one, fucking hell, it was about 5 minutes between them. There was 5 minutes in that afternoon where Man City, the record books will never tell you this, because if you look at the record books, Man City scored at such a time and Liverpool scored at such a time. But in real time, there was 5 minutes of that afternoon where Man City could have come to Liverpool a couple of weeks later and beat Liverpool and gone top of the league, right? Well, of course, it didn't pan out like that, you know what I mean? Oh, fucking hell, you know, I was convinced, you know, it was only a matter of time we were going to win the league. I thought we were going to win it the year before, you know what I mean? And for 5 minutes, I thought, oh, maybe they're not. Maybe Man City, you know, it didn't last long, did it? We'd only played like 15 games, hadn't we? You know, but then when Mane scored, I'm screaming, what did he fucking say? What did he fucking say? Because all he said was Mane with the header at the far post. Oh, what was so, oh, what a brilliant header. And all. Oh, what the fucking hell did he do? Did he stand on his hands and header on, off the ground or what? Like, you know, because he didn't describe the header. But I was absolutely made up to see the lads coming out of the ground that day. Oh, and then they catch up with the mates who they were sitting nowhere near and all. And I'm in the car park watching them come back. Oh, it's absolutely fabulous.
Jesus, described absolutely fabulous. You can take yourself back to that moment at Villa Park when a lot of people think Liverpool have won the league, that's where they knew they'd won the league for the first time in 30 years. The enthusiasm there of, like, why did you go back to match? I think he's summarised it there and go.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll have as much as going.
I love seeing the young ones. I consider this as passing it on. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and if we get to a final or something like that, you know, where there's one ticket, well, my lad's going in and I'm not. But I'm waiting outside for them, like you're saying. And that passion, that continuation of it.
It's not just passion, it's the joy that the football gives you.
It's also, I mean, I've got to say at first, right, the 89-90 season, I went for a cup the first couple of games. I could not get over You'll Never Walk Alone before the start of the game.
Yeah.
And then I remember as we got beat, we battered Coventry and lost 1-0. Cyril Regis scored. What a player he was. I loved the bones of him. Yeah. Everyone loved Cyril Regis. Scores a goal, and I was just like a shell of myself. I was in a bad place in my life and just didn't enjoy going anymore. So I sold my season ticket to someone in work for 20 quid. And I just said, I'm not going anymore. That's it. I don't want to know. So I didn't keep track of the scores or anything. Old Bob Byars was a shareholder. And I'm talking about a proper old school Scouse gentleman. And he liked a cigar. Yeah. He worked in town, and he liked barley sugars as well.
Yeah. Was it Bob Paisley?
No. It was Bob Childs. Right. And when the trains were on strike or unreliable, he'd give me a lift right into Old Hall Street. You know what I mean? What a gentleman.
Yeah.
And he used to drink in the local bar where my mum and dad would go every now and again. And somewhere in the run into the 1990 championship season, he magically had a spare ticket in the shareholders' place where you could even rest your arms on the thing in front. This is an experience I'd never had in my life. Yeah. Magically had this thing. There's no doubt in my mind, looking back, like it was like, he got on well with my dad, if he got a word in. And it was like, you couldn't do our team in a favour, could you? Shall we get on at the match? Yeah. So I went to a couple of games in the running, Rosenthal, coming back. I remember what an impact he made. And I got that bug that PJ's just been talking about, of us all together.
Yeah.
Us all together. Now, I was angry at Liverpool at some point. For example, right, I just said, right, as far as I'm concerned, Liverpool FC should never play at Hillsborough again. And if the league want to take a cob on, we're not playing. So what are you going to do? Sue us. And what score do you want Sheffield to have? 3-0, 5-0? You can have it.
Yeah.
We are not playing there ever again. Not even until you straighten it out. Just we should never play there again.
Yeah.
And I was hugely disappointed. I mean, the Daily Star didn't cover itself in much glory, and the Daily Star was part of the Sky deal somewhere in the advertising on the boards and something like that. And I remember us all singing, "The Daily Star is full of shit." The first time we were at home, that Sky had a game, that the Daily Star boards were there. I understand that Liverpool's hierarchy at the time, the journalist for the Scum, was apologetic and offered his resignation, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And the club said, well, listen, it's not been you. And I think the club made a mistake at that point. They should have said, well, go and work for someone else because you're welcome. And, you know, we'll help you get a job, you know. I was angry about that with Liverpool. But on the whole, I thought that Liverpool had handled the disaster as a club from the, you know, in my early days of shock. And in my early days, I thought, well, no, they opened the ground for us. They let us all in.
That was fabulous.
They did an annual memorial. Yeah.
And it was all in the hands of the families. It was the family's
difficulties. I kind of didn't have anything against the club.
Yeah.
But equally, no. I would have been more staunch, like, do you know what I mean? I mean, I'd have flown, you know, justice for the 96. I'd have flown Richie's "We Told You They Lied" banner from the top of Anfield and said, we'll go and sue us then. We've got the money, like you have.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Never mind the political niceness of it. This is our heart and soul. Is there a more important date in Liverpool? If Liverpool Football Club go on to another 100 and whatever it is years that we've got, 130 years, whatever it is there going to be a more important date in our history than this? I certainly fucking hope not. But on the whole, I understand in life as well the passion that us here sitting would have about that. And we do need to be reined in. And it does need to be articulated. And there are proper channels. But by the same virtue, I just think, you know, why didn't they sack Souness for gross misconduct the following morning, the very, very following morning after what he did? I don't ever want to meet the man. An apology will never be enough. Probably, well, no maybe about it. If I pick my all-time...
But it was like rumblings then, wasn't it?
It is rumblings, like there was, you know what I mean? But to me, it's not supporting us enough.
I know, I just mean to say that, you know, it was like, you know, look at that bastard's son, you know what I mean? That's out of order, that, like, and it was like rumblings, not broadcast the way that it is now on social
media. And that's our confidence, you know, now, talking in a different generation.
It's a different world, I get it. Although we were all saying the same thing, you know, you know, he's bang out of order and that. Like, wasn't it the game when we played Portsmouth?
Yeah.
It was after that, I got home and all that.
I was like, you're not going to believe it. And then obviously, you know, round the anniversary, that comes out. I personally do. And I think the club should have, at that point then, well, we'll sack you for gross misconduct. I think the club should have a strategy where, as you come into the club, you are not allowed to speak to that agency. If you think that's compromising yourself, go and sign for someone else. This is us. Now, over time, that's kind of evolved, and that's not been. I'm not saying that now. We all know how we felt. You know, we talk about. You know, we've all got our little gangs on match day, haven't we? And I love it when we come across each other on the home games every now and again. We just cross over. I love bumping into your group. He said, "I love bumping into your." I love that. You know, going to Mere Bank and having a Guinness with your gang and all that. Yeah. All that. Just that little, you know, fraternisation with the other agencies. Like, do you know what I mean? Oh, it's great, isn't it? There's no greater pleasure. We all felt that, but we didn't feel empowered, I don't think. And now that we do, that's what I wanted the club to do. And maybe maybe part of me understood that the club couldn't quite go that far because there was legal processes and they felt handcuffed by being seen to be being reasonable and all this shit. But somewhere in the equation at the end of the 1990 season, this happened, right? This is the chain of events. My dad worked, you know, my dad should have been in the Beatles. He worked 8 days a week. No, seriously, he really did. If it'd be 200, I'll never work as hard for my family as my dad did. That was his way. The first season, do you remember the old CZs with the vouchers in?
Yeah.
Right, and so you didn't have it, and you didn't even have a seat, did you? It was a ticket, just like a voucher. So voucher one, the first home league game, you take a voucher out bank.
That's right, yeah.
And it had like about, that sort of like vouchers 1 to 21, because it was a 22 team first division. And then vouchers 22 to 40 odd would be for all the ones used in the subsequent cup ties or replays or midweek throwaways or whatever.
Yeah.
And ironically, in the 89-90 season, there was a voucher 50 at the end. And that was the voucher that you had to have as proof to renew your season ticket.
Yeah.
So there's a coincidence here. So why it gives me CZ away? The club aren't keeping records.
Mm.
So I decide I want to go back. I've been in a match with Bob a couple of times. What a man. Yeah, go on. I'm going to have it again. So I either wrote or spoke to the club and I didn't say nothing about any. I just said, I haven't kept the thing. Any chance?
Mm.
So the club wrote me a letter and said no. But I didn't say anything. Do you know what I mean? And they've got the rules and the rules are in place and there's a waiting list and there's this and there's that. No, I didn't. So I said, I'm going to have to say it a bit more. I'd like you to ring me. And so they phoned us and I wasn't in and my dad took the call. I don't know what it was, come home from work or whatever it was. He said, we're going to ground in a minute. He said, you want a season ticket, don't you? He said, we're going to ground. You've got one. And I thought, he's volleyed them all over. You know what I mean? He's never been able to say it to me face.
Yeah.
He's never said since. Never nothing. You know what I mean? I just thought,
yeah.
He's going back to match. And although it could never be the same, it has evolved to be the same in that we found each other, lads.
Mm-hmm.
Or we were thrust up onto each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had that level of understanding over time. And then watching all these youngsters coming behind us, reiterating what we've said with their technology. But how smart the kids are today. I mean, you should have seen me trying to get in the last home game with that fucking honestly, what I mean, and you know what I mean? I got an O level in English, I got an O level in maths. When video recorders come out, I could record any channel, I could even tune HTV and S4C in on our telly. But I can't do nothing like that now. But all these youngsters with their passion and understanding and respect, it's like part of a human pyramid, I think, of it. And then when James was born, I was like, I don't care if he hates footy. And if he likes ballet, I will buy the tutu and go every time. The only thing I want from it is that if he's ever asked to score, and even if he doesn't watch the game and it's the European Cup final, I hope he says, I hope Liverpool win for the family. And then my man, I even considered not going the matches again when James was born. I said, my dad, I've got too much on.
Yeah.
And I remember a couple of mates going, you're fucking joking. You should at least go to the homes because we're doing the ways then as well. So I was like, I'll wear myself. What should I do? Well, I'll see how it goes. So I kept going the homes. Yeah. And then the only time my mum's ever been to Anfield was on the pitch in 89 when we were paying our respects.
Yeah.
And she wasn't a bit of good. But she's been brought up in a fanatical football house. And her dad, my granddad, James MacDonald, he loved Liverpool too. And she said to me, when I come home from the match one day, I said, he wants to start playing footy. He wants to start going to matches. When he's in junior school, when he's seven, he'll get it about then. There's no point taking him before, then he won't get it. My mum just said, listen, he doesn't stop talking about you until you get home, and he just says, when can I go? And I said, all right, so I'll take him once. He might think, well, I've been now. Fucking tiger by the tail. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? On the way home, it was like, when are we going to Celtic, Dad? Do you know what I mean? It was like, and literally it was five on the back of the bus with all the lads, you know. So I was just like, so that whole thing of coming back to it, and then watching all the thing, watching the way they, like, the younger fans are like experiencing the, and I watch them and I sort of look at them and they, I see them blathered and they've been here ways and they've been their first European Cup win and all. It just makes me feel they're proud of it all. It makes me feel connected and takes me back to being part of the connective that my granddad took me dad to watch Liverpool in the second division where we were no one. And then look at our people and look at all we've got.
Yeah.
And so as disappointed as I've been with football, and they've taken a lot from me.
Mm.
When I say they, I say the FA, I say the police, I say the government.
Mm.
Why should they take all that from me? And why should they take all that from my son?
Yeah.
And then why should they take all that from me dad being able to be made up, for example? I mean, you know, me dad, you know, the Barcelona game, for example, the semi-final.
Greatest night of
football. I left me, I was in the ground, I was in the cop, it was unbelievable. And me lad's in there celebrating with a mate he's known right through school. It's his turn, I've seen it all. And I didn't stay behind. I wanted to go. All I wanted to do was go home. And on the out the way, I did, that was the first person saved in the Stanley who'd been in the cop, because I don't like queuing for my ale. But it wasn't that wasn't the reason. I wanted to phone Jenny.
Hmm.
I knew this was immeasurably good. And before I phoned Jenny, I was thinking, Tucker, I'd be booming on this.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear my dad's version of this tomorrow, because if we were shite, he'd fucking bury us and then they'd take all the credit for when we win. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, but why should that be taken from us? That's our culture.
Yeah.
That's
what
we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm back.
We have to manoeuvre around all the other forces in the game, don't we? Mm. The likes of this, you know, given the example of the kind of power that they think that they yield, you know, they're all you know, I mean, over the years, you know, I've had run-ins. In the early days, we had Brian Hall as community development officer, you know, and we had run-ins with him, you know, where, you know, he wasn't as accommodating as he made himself out to be and things like that. But for me personally, I got a season ticket. I started off with other survivors, used to meet at the front, people I'd never known before Hillsborough, and a couple of lads who Jared worked with, who had learning difficulties, and we used to gather at the bottom of the cop on the left-hand side as you look at the pitch. And we had a little group going there while it was still standing, you know, and when they come to put the sheets in the cop, I had a season ticket. I know he only had one then, and the first game they played was against Arsenal, wasn't it? With no roof on the cop. And we were at a football tournament in Crawley with Alf and the kids from the Gordon. Oh, before that, while it was still standing, our Tom had come with me to a football tournament, like a six-a-side, the Merseyside Police five-a-side tournament. And our kids from the Gordon had, on Stanley Rose, they'd qualified to the knockout, knockout phases. We'd won the local part and gone to like the city-wide part, and they got the opportunity to play at Melwood, and it was on a cinder pitch. You remember them old cinder pitches, pissing down with rain and everything was delayed and what have you. But by the time we come to get the kids back to Kirkdale, it was too late to get Tom home and then go the match on my own, so I took him the match. I think we drew 2-2 against Ipswich, and that was the first time he ever went. Yeah, and honestly, if he was 3, that's the most he was. You could probably find it in the records. And then the first match of the seated cop, Tina took him, and she didn't get in, because they only had one ticket, and of course she's carrying him in her arm, like, you know what I mean? She's like 4 then, and they wouldn't let her in, because he needed, supposed to have 2 tickets, like. I've still got the voucher for the first game of the cup with the sheets in. So anyway, that was my thing. And then I can't remember where Bernard must have went with somebody else. But he stayed with us. As he had 3 lads with learning difficulties, John, Bernard and Albert. And he'd done it for his work to encourage their social activities, you know, taking them to match. And when it come to the sheet, they said to them, where do you want to go? Well, John wanted to go on the Kemlin Road with Gerrard. Albert was a nuisance. He wanted to be as close to the players' tunnel as he could get. He'd wait outside the players' entrance all day before the game anyway. So we went in the paddock on his own and Bernard stayed with us. So that's how we carried on going. So there's four of us, me, Carolyn, who's a survivor, who I know from the survivors groups in Healdsborough Centre, Bernard, and our Tom. And when Tom was little, my mate's kids used to use that ticket. And to bring this round to today, I made a flag earlier on this year for a lad called Tom Hadwin. And of course, Tom, you know, for God, God bless him, 28 years of age he was. His eyes on his mates asked me, could you know, was I make a flag? I said, of course, well, yeah. He says, any chance of getting a grant? I said, well, I'll ask the question, you know, and it's the only question I did ask of the club, for banners, was to take memorial banners, and I never asked for any glory banners or whatever to go in. And anyway, he said, you know, this is what we want on a Tom Hadwin, blah, 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 it's a memorial banner. So I made this banner for him. And when his brother come round for him, I said to him, have you got an Uncle Jimmy? He said, yeah, that's right. I said, oh, I think I used to live next door and drive a taxi. He said, yeah, that's right, yes. Fucking hell, he wouldn't credit that. I said, Jimmy was my next door neighbour for years, he was. And after Hillsborough, I think Hillsborough was the first year I'd done it, I'd done an amp around with him. And he used to say, we don't have Christmas anymore, we have December, because Tom was born the 7th of December. He used to have 2 weeks on the ampers with Jimmy Hadwin, right? And then we'd have Christmas. And anyway, so... Anyway, he takes the banner in and they want to get the banner back. So I said, yeah, all right. Oh, no, I got permission. They wanted the banner for the funeral. So they took the banner at the funeral. And then I asked him about putting the banner in the ground. So we brought the banner back around to the house. And he said to me, I mentioned your name to Uncle Jimmy. He said he was made up to talk about it. He said, ah, Tom sat in your seat. I said, yeah, what? He said, ah, Tom's the lad who died. He said, he sat in my seat. Well, he sat in our seat. He said, well, you must have been away somewhere. He said, because my Uncle Jimmy reckons that he had your cards. And our Tom went and sat in the seat. Yeah. But in the early days with Tom's ticket, it was Jimmy's lad, Jimmy. He had a lad, James. He was that bit older than Tom. And he used to, you know, we used to go to some games. And my other mate, Kenny Douglas, his lads, Alex, they used to go. So Tom used to go the odd game. And then when he got to the juniors, he started going every other game. You know what I mean? And he's done that for a few, and then we take them, him and his mates, the cup matches and that. And then when he got in the seniors, he got the ticket for himself, so we started going every week. You know what I mean? But my constant companion through all this was Bernard. Because he went with us every week, didn't he? He come, you know, and we used to meet him at the bakery and walk, you know, walk him into the ground and then walk him back to the bakery and that. Yeah, and then in the end, we used to have to go to the house for him, you know, and walk him down from the house and that, yeah.
That tightness of community and closeness and memories, that's what's kept us all.
Well, that's how I kept going, together. You know, going with the match.
That's what gets you through it, doesn't
it? Yeah, well, I used to know when Bernard was made. I mean, Bernard used to sit on the end seat. He'd be fucking nuisance. Wouldn't move his legs when people were coming in and out of our row. You know what I mean? And honestly, God, as soon as they kicked off, Bernard would be down the stairs at 104 to get a cone of chips and a drink of Coke. And in the later years, when he was struggling with that, he used to give it to the steward to carry for him. Yeah. Honest to God, so he was the first fella in Anfield to have his snacks in seats.
Oh, he's ahead of his time.
Well, everyone knew him, you know what I mean? He was a cracker. So that's how we kept going. God bless him, he died a couple of years ago, you know. But yeah, that's how I kept going to the game, you know what I mean? Kept going to the match. And didn't really have any real involvement with the club. When they'd done the concert in, was it 1998? The concert?
Feels about right, yeah. 97 maybe, actually.
97. Maybe 97. I say 98 because I think it was after Jack Straw. I think it was after.
97 was the Straw carry on.
Oh, well, it was after that, wasn't it?
Stuart.
Yeah. And we had the banner on the side of the Sounds stage We had the Shankly banner for the last match of the Cop. We had a run-in with Brian all over the flags for the Euro 96. We made a big badge flag. We're going to do a big display with all the flags, and it never happens. But we had some run-ins with them, like, but by and large, I mean, it was about going the match, you know what I mean? That's the main thing. And it still is like that. Unfortunately, I think it's just gone through the last phase, I think, of becoming a televised sport. You know, this VAR.
I had to carry on with them. Like most people listening to this will know we told you they lied one, but I've got I done a McKenzie, yeah. Kelvin McKenzie, you scum one. And obviously, like, for anyone that doesn't know anything about that, that famous headline on it, well, infamous headline on the 19th of April 89, the truth.
Yeah.
McKenzie wanted it to be you scum.
That's right, yeah.
I done a banner. Kelvin McKenzie, you scum.
Yeah.
And we took it on the Cop. And next thing, we were surrounded by stewards and they were trying to take it down and all this. And we were like fighting with them to keep it up.
Yeah.
And I was fucking fuming. I'll get arrested. I'll get, they can do whatever they want to me. This is staying up. They were telling me it was a political banner, so I had to. That was the Aviva with the "We told you they lied" one. They tried to take that off us because they said it was a political banner. In the Cop with the with the McKenzie you scum one, it was they said that you can't attack an individual. That's what the stewards were saying. You can't have a banner attacking an individual. Yeah. So next thing I was getting I've never had a problem with the club. I mean, I don't think they've supported survivors as well as they possibly could have done over the years. Yeah. But in this particular instance, you know, we had someone brilliant on board and Tony Barrett intervened and he said, right, where are you sitting? Yeah. He said, what? Yeah, he texted me straight away. What row number are you? I said, row 23. Bang, he was there. And straight away,
you had the things. You remember the Arsenal game? That they were really good over that when they played
FA Cup game, was it?
Yeah, the Cup game. And Lawrence was on the commentary. Said, "Can we get on with the match now?" But that they were brilliant over that. That was a flag day in support of the Justice Campaign, wasn't it? I mean, the Justice Campaign had some really difficulties. The club have never really
recognised the HJC after, which was like a bit of a
I think there was some. With my involvement, they never did know. But I remember that one with the flag day, and the other one that comes to mind is the time when they were due to play Blackburn on the 15th of April. And in the end, you know, it was Blackburn that pushed Liverpool Football Club from what I can gather to say, look, you don't have to play on this day, you know, we're quite happily moving. And I'm always conscious of that. I checked this year the dates for the
first days I look for games. Every fixture.
But they were good over that. I'd done a banner for that game. And they were good. They come round to that, you know, and said, no, yeah, that's fine. And that should be set in stone. You know what I mean? There are things going on with Liverpool Football Club to do with Hillsborough and what have you that have had to be left in abeyance since the trials happens. And they're going to come up again. And they're going to change things at that football club. I know they are. Things are going to happen, you know, but it's not for shouting out in the open air and what have you, you know, because, you know, we've been strong before and come back at them with things that they've done and they put us off. The discussions have been put off until after the trials. Well, the trials are over and we're coming for you, you know what I mean? Because it's going to happen.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Oh, 100% it's happening, yeah. I mean, we've had to sit on that.
The thing is, you know, it's completely changed, hasn't it? I mean, the Liverpool Football Club now, I used to say, they're not a club, they're a corporation. They're not a corporation. A corporation is Ford or Kraft or, you know, that's what a corporation is. Let's get it right. They're an international media company. That's what they are. International sports media company. That's what they are. You know what I mean? They don't be grandiose in them up to be some big I am, you know, sells cars in every country on the planet. You know what I mean? And you, maybe football's going that way. But, you know, they really don't understand some of the cultures, and it's important that we do fight back, you know what I mean? The way they're whittling away at all the sociality of going to match and stuff like that, you know, is absolutely disgusting to my mind. But what can you do? You know,
I think that's kept me in there, though, as well, what you're saying
that's
there.
Right, because you've got to fight
we are
back
the club, and
yeah,
do you know when we're gone?
Yeah.
Things get watered down by the generations or by the experiences and things like that. You know, we have got such a brilliant heartbeat support of the club. Yeah. And because it's like family generational, I see my role now as, you know, I used to, as a young Red, you'd always look up to those, the old boys, or where did you go? You know, it's Cup Final 65 and, you know, all that, you know what I mean? And then that's where I got my traditions from.
Yeah.
And then, This club is especially, it is our club, and it is our club. And we can let them have it if they want. And we can't control all of it. We can't win all the battles.
It can happen because, you know, that dynamic we were talking about before, that social energy, that, you know, connection that we have with each other. We can't let that happen because, you know, you can't take community out of football, no matter how big it is.
So we've got to keep that
community.
Politics.
Yeah.
So we've just got to keep our bit. But
yeah,
we've got to keep on with that.
In their terms, you know, they think that, you know, they operate like a business, and to them, it's a matter of ethics and stuff like that, you know. But you look at the you know, the ridiculous situation of the Super League I mentioned before, and the way that Liverpool have come out of that, and, you know, I honestly think it's the best way forward.
I agree, you're
making the best of a bad job all the time, and we might be fighting a losing a battle, but we'll fight.
Oh, you know, I love going down fighting. But one of the things is as well.
We've had 32 years of that.
Yeah, to me. But by definition, well, history will judge us. But also by this, what the club are selling, right? What they need is they need big money.
Big money. That's what they're selling.
They need a boss scouting system. They need the best coach in the world, and they need a boss gang of players. And they need a good media thing, like you're saying, and they need a fan base and a colourful fan base. And somewhere in the equation, eventually, over the years, with the whole Premier League bollocks and the whole European thing, there had to be a line drawn somewhere. And inch by inch, the fans have been too inactive across all clubs, not just ours. But we are quite active, as people might have noticed. And what I'm pleased about is they haven't got all the aces, because we are one ace card. And the reason people tune in a midweek game, when someone's just got beat by Barcelona 3-0, when it looks like they can't win the league and it doesn't look like they're going anywhere, there's one postcode on planet Earth where that TV programme tonight might turn out.
Yeah.
And that's because of us.
That's right.
And I'm handing that down to my son. And that was handed down to me.
And
for that reason, and the joy of handing that down, with no guarantee of success, by the way, because if you guarantee success, that's no good.
Do you know what I mean, it's got to be hard, it's got to lose as well.
So for that reason, that's why I loved the whole, and that obviously, that, you know, in all the horror that we've been talking about, and in hoping to get somewhere near finishing this on a high, that's the legacy that we've got, and it's our duty now to educate about what's gone on in the past.
Well, let's finish on a high then. Let's finish on the Hillsborough Independent Panel report, because
well, can I just say this about going to match first? Because I think I can summarise that with something that I say on the tour about going to match. You know, the difference between Liverpool supporters, between the crowd at Anfield, is that they get involved in the game. You know, I don't go to match to watch a game of football. I go to take part. You know what I mean? And I think that's true. We want to be the 12th man. We want to shuck the ball in there. We make every effort to shuck the ball.
I deserved the medal after Istanbul. I think so. I deserved the medal.
I'm going to put your name on Destiny Delivered. No, but you know, that's the big difference. It's that, you know, wanting to take part, wanting to, you know, have an influence on the game, adding something to it, and that's what they, you know, that is a big selling point.
That's our ace card.
Liverpool football.
A lot of that from our generation comes from Hillsborough as well. Not just being born a Red,
yeah,
but wanting, like, your determination to
a defiance.
You'll never walk alone.
It's a defiance
at half time in Istanbul. Yeah. I always like people say, "Oh, it's different than I." Yeah. And that was the one word I'd use for that. You'll never walk alone. Yeah. It was a defiant one. You're all laughing at us wherever you are. You know, in England, you're all laughing because we're 3-0 down, but we still love our team. It was a defiant, like fuck you.
Yeah.
And that's what we've shown over 32 years, isn't it? Fuck you.
Yeah.
And your family.
This is who we are. This is what we do. So, that's the way it is going to match.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the report then before we finish? Because I think it's a high to finish, Sean. And, you know, we'll start with you, Damien.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're talking about sort of unique events earlier and unique powers of compassion and... What's also fairly unique is that the people win. You know, we've talked about fighting against the state. We've talked about the powers. We've talked about, you know, this the time afterwards when you felt the full force of what the government and you know, powers that be can throw at you and the powers that they have and what they control. And we've talked about dark times in the justice campaign when there was a feeling of hopelessness, I would say, you know, and I come in as part of that. I wasn't at Hillsborough, but obviously, you know, remember times where you did feel like, well, that's it. That must have been a day that you doubted would ever happen at various points, and it did, and it was incredible. And what so many people achieved to get to that point, you know, needs celebrating.
One of the greatest achievements ever in the memory of man. You know, against overwhelming odds, the truth was completely on our side and the door was shut in our face. Such love and such noble pursuit of truth and justice in the memory of our loved ones and the suffering of those who did return. What a community. I can't tell you how proud I am, you know, talking about it. I've said it a few times during this discussion. Where else would you rather be from? Like, you know, I'm made up. It's such a... It is a unique achievement. It literally people power. But the truth was on our side and I was never in any doubt about that. I remember the first time I read Phil Scraton's book. I was on the bus going to work and I was literally punching the air. Reading the book on that. I didn't know Phil at the time. So I just wrote to him. Phil, I'm going to have to tell you here. Just been punching the air.
You must have loved Matt.
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. I just couldn't. I was like, here's what I think and here's what I know and here's what my mates around us all say. Here's the story, but here's someone who can talk on their pitch. That's the difference. He could explain it in a way to somebody. He could fence with the opposition about the legalities of it, the validity of it, what was right and what was, you know, and all that. When the panel we put, it was like pushing at the scene. The 20th anniversary come, which is when I got most involved with the justice campaign, because I seen it as the moonshot. That's the expression I used at the time. Because I knew that the publicity coming towards us would be massive. There would be an appetite by a largely new generation for what really happened. And so we were going to get a chance to explain ourselves in the media, in the mainstream media. You know, I did Football Focus. I mean, how mad, I've grown up all my life and I'm on Football Focus. How's that happen? But it was an opportunity that, you know, the BBC, other news agencies were giving us a new breed of people saying, well, okay, what happened? And I, because the truth was on our side so much, I was supremely confident in the truth.
Yeah.
And so the panel comes and Scraton's heading it up. And he's going to get more resources than he had when he was doing his book. And whatever comes out is going to be on the 6 o'clock news. Thought, this will do me. This is like Germany taking penalties, this, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? We're not going to miss. It's just literally, it's going to go bang, bang. So I felt supremely confident. And then the family's got the family support group got a lot of tickets and then the justice campaign got some. And I was the privilege of my life, you know, to be invited into the Anglican. And it was like really mad. And my mum's worrying about me and my Jenny's worrying about me. And I've got my best suit on, going in the Anglican. And we were in lockdown. You know, the world was waiting. It was embargoed, the news. And I was with Peter here. And I was with And A. Tempany stayed in our house that night, and Peter came down to have a bevy by ours. And there was three different characters. So Peter said, we're getting fuck all out of this. No, without Peter, like I said at the start, you know, earlier on, we need Peter to be doing that. And then Adrian was kind of in, we're going to get prosecutions out of this and everything. So there's like the difference of opinion from the people from the same pens, you know. I just got, well, I thought, I'll say this, I literally, in the day or two before going to the Anglican for the panel report, this is madness. I was extra careful crossing the road so I didn't get run over. Because I'm going to be at this moment in history. I'm going to be at something that I've waited all this time that we were definitely told we were there. We weren't going to get. And I was like, after what had come out after the 20th anniversary and all the publicity and all our testimony, which took a toll on me. I don't mind telling you, I probably took too much on. I'll take probably out. I took too much on and about the interviews we were doing. And I remember at one point agreeing, there's an interview I don't want to do now. My head was chocker. And I had a day off work. And round that time, do you remember the 4-4 draw with Arsenal? It took me back. I could smell 89. You know, that game, you know, I could feel it in the air and the summer and it was all, and it's like, have a way with yourself now. And you're a dad and, you know, you got your girl and we've got our two boys and all that. You've got to stop at some point. But all that dials forward into going in the Anglican, and we had, it was unbelievable. We had Silver Service Scouts. And I felt like Judgment Day. And it was just, and I was supremely confident, and you know that, Peter, I'm not bullshitting. Yeah, I was supremely confident.
I was the other way.
Yeah.
I was very cautious.
Yeah, and we've always needed it to be there. Never change. I know you wouldn't fucking anyway. But get in there and everyone was like, the families got the news first and then we got poured into us. There was a lot of tears and a lot of hugging going on, and there was people who were think a lot about and all that came in, and I was just like, I just cannot believe I am here to witness this day. 12th September 2012. My God.
Stevie Wright walked in with John Glover, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He was absolutely fantastic. Steve Kelly come in as well. Yeah. He had the book and he just went, this Damien, dynamite I've got dynamite. I remember him doing that. And I remember just like him. I remember scraping, wobbling. I remember scraping, breaking down, crying next to you, Peter, when you came into each other. And then I was outside with Aid, and then Jim Sharma was with us and all that keep it. And I had the panel report, the book itself, like clutched to me. I couldn't clutch it any closer. I got picture took with it and everything. And then you took Anne down. You took Anne Williams down, and I'll let you come to that. So I went, what am I doing? I said, we're at the top of the hill. And I just turned to Adrian and John, and I went, we're going to fucking Yankee. Because there was nowhere else I wanted to go, and we just walked down the hill, and as we opened the door in the Yankee, and we know the characters who were in the Yankee, don't we? And Jerry McIver's in there with all the boys, like, and all I can say is I'm so glad they're on our side. Yeah. And I just walked in and I just literally held it up like it was the FA Cup. And it was like, everyone was absolutely booming. This fella just came over to us and I'm getting the ale, and said, that's not me, I am happy to get. He said, no, you know, what's your name, what's my name? I said, I'm getting the ale, got the ale and all that. I just couldn't believe me. Look, my dad had not long died at this point, and I thought, I think my half of him actually might see, he's proud of you today, Damien. He might actually say that. But I knew it, you know. And then we went up on the steps, St. George's Hall, and I'm like, what an historic place. You know, the workers' strike, the suffrage jets, all that's right about our city, all, and the world's watching. And here's the truth. I just felt like doves above me. And I felt all that. And then, so we got walloped in the, we ended up in the ship and Mice did me. It was. We had a great sing song and all that keep. And I to this day, and you can tell Burnham, I started Blue and White Shite. And I do mean it, but in that loving way, and you know, in that Scouts way of like, ironic humor, because, you know, we're so grateful to all that he achieved and, you know, and good luck to him and all that. And, It was so beautiful. I mean, I remember me and Aid, so we could have stayed out till 4 days later, and the two of us just said, Adrian just said, I need to go home. He said, I'm going to go, and he was going to stay another night in ours, and he said, I need to go home and see my girl, and I said, I'm going to see mine too. So he goes back to ours, And we were more than a few in, weren't we? And then the LFC TV comes up on. And then I'd done an interview and I was watching it. And then Miguel said, you've just been agreeing with yourself on the telly. I'm glad about that, because at least I'm consistent. Yeah. And I just, the next day it was like incredible. And I remember a very short period of time after, I remember we had a family do, my family and Jenny's family, and we went on a barge and that, and it was like absolutely fantastic. And I remember being in the Lake District, and my girl loves the Lake District and all the green and the colours and all that about that. And I've gone up there and sort of gone, well, it's sound like. But the first time I went to the Lake District after the panel report, I could really see the colours and I could really smell the smell. And seriously, it was like I really felt different. Yeah. And I was at Peter Thompson's old pub.
That's right.
Where you've been. Obviously, you know where I mean, so you've been, haven't you?
Yeah.
And I was just like, the world's a different place.
Yeah.
The world's a better place for this now. So that I didn't realise. I thought most people who knew me at the time would say I was generally an upbeat person. Obviously, we've talked about the darkest of times here. But it lifted something from me. And the world is a better place and my life is better for what the panel did, what came out of it, what we were able to contribute to the panel and what subsequently came out with the verdicts and the unlawful killing and the exoneration of all the Liverpool fans and the vindication of our campaign. I am in a very strong place and I intend to try and spread this love amongst my peers because that's what we deserve.
Interesting.
Yeah, I remember in the days that led up to when the HIP panel was going to publish its findings, I was making phone calls frantically trying to get into the cathedral. And they said all the places had been allocated and this, that and the other. And then, I'm a courier in real life, and I got a job down to Reading, I think it was, on that morning. So I picked it up the night before. I got down there, like, at the crack of dawn, and I thought, right, I'll race back to cathedral now. I'll be sitting outside in my van. At least I'm, like, close to where the news is going to break, blah, blah, blah. And I think I got back to Knutsford. And I got a phone call, can you just come into the firm of work that I've done a lot of work for? So I thought, fuck. So I drove there, and one of the managers got in the van with me and blah, 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 and the news had just broke. And I was so, like, emotional and blah, blah, blah. But I've got this, like, that one of the bosses for this firm I do a lot of work for, and he's sitting next to me in the van. And then next thing, Cameron, I said, can I just keep this on the radio? And he goes, yeah. And next thing, Cameron's on with his double apology. And he goes, it's unequivocal now. Like, Liverpool supporters weren't to blame. And I'm trying to hold it all in, and I let out some kind of, like, fucking primeval, like...
Yeah, gas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just, fucking hell. That was it. And this fella's sitting next to me. I don't know what he thought.
What was going on.
But yeah, I'd done that little job, and then I went home, and I think I spent the whole day watching LFC TV and all the news channels, and it was just tears streaming down my face.
Yeah.
The weight that lifted. And then I went with a load of lads to the civic reception. Damien's just mentioned the St. George's all that night, and just to have that weight lifted off your mind. And when I give evidence in Warrington, I said, and I quote, for the first 23 years of my life, I was branded as a drunken, ticketless murderer because of the lies that had been told. Yeah. And those 23 years were up to that day, And when I spoke earlier about being able to see, like, the pain in people's eyes, and I think that all disappeared after the HIP and after the inquest verdicts and all that.
Yeah.
So what a day that was. Yeah. Fucking.
Yeah, it was a remarkable day. I mean, I mentioned before when I got up in the morning watching the BBC News, and they were interviewing John Ashton, and he was describing the rescue, you know, and organising the triage system behind the Leppins Lanes, and I wrote on an envelope, it's the most remarkable act of spontaneous human compassion the country's ever seen since, you know, dot, dot, dot. And I felt really good about that, that it was John that had come up, you know, felt like that was an omen, you know, I'd been cautious about raising my optimism openly about it, because they have a habit of coming back in your face, don't they, these type of things, you know, official inquiries and reports. So I wasn't one about being blasé, but I was made up to be invited to the cathedral, and all credit to Sheila Coleman and Steve Wright and Steve Kelly, who were, you know, did Kenny Derbyshire and that, for putting me on the list of people, because I hadn't been actively involved in the campaign since Anne Williams's presentation to Parliament in 2005. So, you know, I wasn't an active campaigner, if you like, and I was honoured to be invited to the cathedral. And I went in my bus. I had a Volkswagen Transporter then, a boogie bus.
That's the boogie bus, yeah.
Yeah, the boogie bus, yeah. And I went down the boogie bus. I wasn't one for drinking, was I? So that didn't bother me. And I wasn't sure that there was going to be cause or reason to drink anyway, like, so it didn't bother me that. So I had a pass to park outside the cathedral, and, you know, I was made up with that. And I felt really good about parking, because I parked outside the west entrance, and it brought to mind the time that I'd gone to the cathedral in the summer of 1989 with my brother. And his partner had come up from Devon to visit. They'd had a baby, Jake, the 29th of March that year. Tina was on jury service. Our office was the top of Duke Street. Tina had gone back to the Crown Court to see if she'd be called to a case. And we were waiting for her to come back and get an early dart. And she never did get an early dart. So my brother Lawrence said to me, come on, we'll go up the cathedral. And I said, yeah, all right, that'll be good. Like, I'll show you where the banner was for the service in 89, you know. So we goes up there, like, and walks inside the cathedral, explains to him where the banner was. Now we'll come to be in there and looks at the stained glass windows and this, that and the other. And so he said to me, so where's the stone? So I said, it's outside the west entrance, it's that one there. She put it to awkward, said, to get to. She said, you've got to go right down the stadium, right down the cathedral. So I said, come on, we'll have a go, like. So we walked out and turned right and walked around the cathedral, you know, to find this stone that they'd laid, you know, on the day of the service. So anyway, we walked around and we said, yeah, there's the stone here. Like, there's still cracks in the mortar around it and that, like, you know what I mean, gleaming gold leaf on it and that, like, you know. And our Lord said, oh, I said, that's lovely. I said, that's a really nice tribute and all that. I said, well, to be honest with you, I said, I don't like it. He said, you what? I said, I don't like it. I said, the fact that they've got this stone on the floor, like, you know, on the way that people's eyes on, you know, on the terraces and that, like, I said, if I had it my way, I said, it'd be up there on the wall. I said, and people would look up to the names and that. And as I said it, a ball fell out of the sky and bounced on every step down the outside the west entrance and rolled to my feet, honest to God. And fucking hell, what's that? So I picks this ball up, fucking hell, it's the lads, off the lads, that, you know. Got to do something. So run over to the wall in the corner. In the wall's all this sand and bits of debris and what have you. And amongst the debris is this pink rose, plastic pink rose. So picks this pink rose up and goes back to the stone. I say the crack, the cement round it was cracked, you know what I mean? So I put the rose in the crack and put my hand to the stone, looked up at the cathedral and said, thanks, lads, you know what I mean? So goes back down to the office where we were, and one of the lads in there said to him, listen, you got to look at this ball here. I said, you won't believe where that's come from. So tells him the story and all that. Like, he said, well, what's it mean? Like, you know, is it a sign? I said, yeah. I said, it's telling me the baby's going to be a boy. He said, yeah, what? I said, well, it's blue, isn't it? I said, if it was going to be a girl, the ball would be pink. I was convinced all along that they'd seen he was going to have a girl, you know what I mean? Sure enough, Tom was a boy. So parking the van when the hip report, you know, I stood at that stone like and looked at that fucking hell. Remember being here, you know, 23 years ago, you know, and watching a fucking ball fall out of the sky and dance down the steps, you know what I mean? So I thought that was a good omen, like. And sure enough, when we went in there, we were second shot where they did all the families first and then they come into us. In fact, tell a lie, they told Anne on her own, didn't they? They told the families, then they told Anne. Yeah. And then they come into us. We were in the survivors' room. And the first in was Stevie Wright and John Glover. And John Glover, we've got them, we've got the bastards, we've fucking got them. And Stevie Wright come in with them saying, they're taking fucking blood alcohol samples, even off the kids. He said, every one of them has had blood alcohol samples. The fucking shadow bastards, John Glover shot, we've fucking got them, we've got them, we've got them, the bastards. And sure enough, then we had Phil Screeton and it was the bishop with him.
Yeah, and Kirk.
The bishop with, that's right, Kirk with the glasses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they reeled it off, you know, what had gone on and all that. Was fabulous.
He was so emotional then.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
It was Phil all he could do not to cry,
crying.
All of them.
I think Phil Screeton was crying.
They were crying in front of
him. And then we had to go up for the speech after we had the dinner, didn't we, the Silver Service Scouts. And one of my abiding memories of the day, hold on, was standing in the queue with Doreen Jones and the grin on her face, you know, and honest to God, it's in my mind's eye as I speak. Absolutely brilliant. And then Anne Williams asked me would I go in the press conference with her. This one. Of course I will. No, we were just in the cathedral, at the dinner waiting for the announcement from Westminster. You weren't allowed to go out in that, were you? Because Tingey was making a speech, David Cameron, wasn't he? And anyway, Anne asked me, but I said, of course I will, Anne, like, you know what I mean? And glad to, like. So that's what we done. Then Cameron gave the speech and all that. They had the families had their speeches, the Justice Campaign had theirs, and then the press conference it was, and then Anne was last in, and I went in with Anne, and I think Dean Harris was on the table.
He was.
And Lou Brooks, and Anne was sitting between me and Lou Brooks, and I always remember Lou Brooks. There was only like half a dozen journalists left, all the others off, you know what I mean? They'd listen to Trevor X, like, and Aspen, all then he's all fucked off, you know what I mean? We stood on the balcony listening to Sheila Coleman and Kenny giving the HJC press conference, waiting to go in, like, but as I say, there was only half a dozen of them left, you know, and Lou Brooks was, you know, telling them about what's going on and all that, like, and I'd never met her before, never seen her. And I remember pushing my chair back and leaning behind her, you know, to get out. Oh, that's brilliant, you know what I mean? And she was absolutely brilliant, you know, and I was just sat there as a comfort to her, you know, and we had no intention of saying nothing, you know. And then Tony Barrett asked me, he said to me, how does it make you feel that 41 people could have been saved, you know, as a survivor? Like, I said to him, well, that makes me number 42, you know what I mean? I said, you know, people saved my life, the greatest act of spontaneous human compassion this country's ever witnessed, you know what I mean? Yeah, so, you know, I was bouncing by then. Mm. But, of course, when we come to get off, we get outside and all the coaches are gone. They forgot all about Sam Williams, you know what I mean? Sam Williams had been left behind. All the coaches had gone down the thing with the motorbike escort and all that, all the families on, tea and coffee on board, free biscuits and everything. And Sam Williams was left at the cathedral to make her own way down to St. George's Hall. I said, yeah, and I said, I've got the bus there, you know, meet the boogie bus. So that's what we did. Jumped in the boogie bus. Sam Williams sitting in the back of the bus making rollies. That's what went on, no man. But she was fucking made up. Honest to God, she was absolutely made up. So when we come down to get down to the thing, well, of course, we had murder getting through town because all the traffic was stopped, you know what I mean? Whereas the coaches, they had motorbike outriders with all the families on, you know what I mean? They got from the cathedral to St. George's all in record time.
Oh,
you know
no,
what
I mean? Just behind me going to Yankee with the lads, mate.
Yeah, but it, you know, like we were last out and it took us ages because all the traffic was held up and the street was closed in front of St. George's Hall. So when we got there, when we got to St. George's Hall, She said, yeah, yeah, I'm Williams, you know. And he said, oh, yeah, sorry about it. Get in. So we get to the door of St. George's. Oh, she said, yeah, I'm Williams. She said, we've been looking everywhere for you. We've been shouting your name for the last 15 minutes. They were running 15 minutes behind because they were waiting for Ann Williams. So, honest to God, she said, yeah, I'll leave your stuff here. She said, yeah, Ann gives you. So gets the bag off Ann and the copies of the report and a coat, you know. No, tell I know she left the coat on. And it takes a bag off, it takes all the reports off. Like, said, yeah, give us them, I'll look after them. So we get to them. So no messing from there. I'm walked straight up. They're all in line waiting to walk out for the parade in front of the steps. And they were waiting for Anne. So Anne runs on, like 50 people in a queue, you know what I mean? And goes straight to the front of the queue. That Roger Phillips was there, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
I think Joe Anderson was there as well.
Yeah.
And they were at the front and they walked out, honest to God. We had all of St. George's all waiting for the boogie bus to sail up. Yeah, so then they done the thing, and later on in the night, these were all in the ship and my eyes on me running around what I had to do and what have you. And I parked the bus up in Islington and walked down. These had all been on the ale all night, like, you know what I mean? And I walked down. There's David Conn and Andy Burnham standing outside the Mersey Tunnel waiting for a taxi. So I'm walking down William Brown Street. These two fellas down on the thing. And I went, fucking hell, must be a pair of woolly bags there, or students or something like that. Stand, fancy. They're obviously waiting for a taxi. Fancy standing there waiting for a taxi, pair of fucking knobheads. So once I get standing there, I realise it's David Conn and Andy Burnham, you know what I mean? Fucking hell. I said, what are you doing? He said, he's waiting for a taxi. I said, we're in the wrong fucking place here, mate, standing outside the Mersey Tunnel. We won't get a cab here. You need to be over there.
Maybe they're waiting for the boogie bus.
Yeah, maybe. So I said to him, you know, Andy Burnham, I said, absolutely remarkable. I met him in the town hall the day. He got ribbons at the grounds, and I was with Ann Williams in the town hall with him, and Ann Williams proper ribbons him in the town hall, you know what I mean? And I said to him, I said, I was with Ann Williams. And he said, oh, well, no, yeah. He said, she didn't half give it to me, didn't she? I said, she did, yeah. And I said, she was quite right. I said, but you've done a proud with that, what's happened there today. I said, that's absolutely brilliant. Because in the town hall, all I said to him in the town hall was, look, the woman's after an inquest on her kid. She's been asking, you know, all these years. She keeps getting knocked back and doing everything that she's asked of her, you know what I mean? But she put her ribbons and like, I said, but well played, you've come up with the goods, mate. You know, you've done really well. I said, and you, David Conn, I said, you are absolutely brilliant as well. I said, because what you've done is put us in the historical context. Because David Conn was big about explaining South Yorkshire Police's role with the miners.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what I was congratulating him for, yeah.
Do you know what? We should be eternally grateful for, like, back in 89, we had no one on the, like, from the media on our side, did we? And we got taken to the cleaners. But when you look back after the HIP and look back after what happened in Warrington, and you're at David Conn, you're
difference in the world, isn't it? It's, you know, that what we've done is then people turn and, you know, and go,
yeah, they believed us and they fought the battle with us. But name them because they deserve. Eleanor Barlow, you know, Joe Thomas,
right,
David Conn, Alex Thompson.
Yeah,
I love the man. I love the man. He always texts me every time something happens with Ellsberg.
Yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he? Yeah,
lovely fella.
Yeah, and he comes. Lovely. But you know what they are, because then you follow their reports and you see the way that they report and you go, absolutely.
All these
brilliant.
People helped us. Yeah.
But then people on that panel, you know, that, I mean, Phil Scraton hasn't ever had half the credit that he deserves, to my mind.
Wow.
And I'm hoping that as we go forward here now, that one of the big things is that they take on Phil's recommendations about the reshaping of inquiries and inquests and that. Because the way that they conducted is absolutely ridiculous, you know, and he's exposed them off the air, and he's given them a model that they can use. But since then, he's been shunned because they think they can get away with it. No, that's not how it works in this country. You know, well, it's not right. It's a look at that fella for the Grenfell. Said he had all kinds of qualifications, the fella, the fire expert. And he made them all up. He literally made them all up.
Yeah.
He got a job checking fire regulations in Grenfell with a load of qualifications he didn't have and qualifications that he made up. That fella should have been arrested on the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's dead important about what you're saying about the support that we've had. And the likes of all the journalists you've just mentioned, and you've just mentioned Scraton.
And I've missed more.
Yeah, and you have, yeah, you know, and we could be here for a long time. And they were a credit to the profession.
Yeah.
We kept the battle for the truth going, and they recognised it and their professional integrity and their educated manner in the way they approach their jobs and their human feelings, both they could see what we were saying, brought us all this way. Life's a team game. And
Show all credit to everyone.
All credit to everyone. And that's entirely different.
We'll leave it there, gents. Thanks so much for coming in. Thanks so much for your generosity of how much you've given of yourselves, because I don't think that can be sort of, you know, underplayed, really. So that was the final part of Peter, Damien and Richie's discussion. Thanks so much again to them for their honesty and just for taking the time. And please remember to think about the people you may want to share this conversation with. Take care. Sports Social Podcast Network.